of the interview with Jose Jaime on the 11th, I guess, of February. So go ahead. You were about to tell me about this case of the little girl.
Her dad was making like about $100 more, and therefore she was not going to qualify. She had an illness that was that needed to be treated because I don't remember the if it was leukemia or what it was, but she could have stayed in the hospital for about a month, and if she would have spent less than 30 days, she was not going to be eligible to get funding for this program of disability. And her dad was saying, well, even if it's only $10 a month, I will have to pay $10 a month, but I need the cure for my child. Well, anyway, what ended up was that there was a rule in the disability services that if the person is hospitalized more than 30 days, even if the person is a child, the child can apply on her own right.
Uh-huh.
And as it happened, the child stayed more than 30 days, so we were able to enroll her on disability, and we saved like at least $1 million uh-huh. on that baby. Which, I mean,
That would have been her medical expenses, you
yeah.
meant? Uh-huh. And no way the family could pay.
Yeah. So the family, I mean, it was a single parent, it was a single dad, and with a child. I don't remember how old she was. She was not a baby. She was like maybe 7 or 8 years old or thereabouts. So we got the goal achieved.
Uh-huh.
Funding for the client and revenue for OHSU.
Uh-huh.
And most of the cases were like that, most of the cases.
You just find ways to make things work within the...
Yeah. We had the case of an undocumented migrant worker who shot himself on the foot, literally.
Okay.
And there was no way that he would have been able to pay for his expenses. But we went through a program called, in the Oregon Health Plan, there is a program called Citizenship Waived Emergency Medical. And he was fitting the categories of that program, so we got funding for him too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, the cases are thousands. Uh-huh. Thousands of cases that we dealt with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And each one a little different and
required. And I cannot say that we were 100% successful, because if they didn't qualify, they didn't qualify. There was no way. But at least we could talk to OHSU, to the fiscal department, and say, this is the conditions, that they cannot pay this much. So because they receive federal funding, they had to open other type of urns to help the people that cannot pay.
They have to take care mm-hmm. of a certain number.
So we were advocates for those that couldn't pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you have? You mentioned that your department was continuing to grow, even though there were cutbacks at OHSU mm-hmm. at that time.
Yeah.
It sounds like you had support then from the administration.
Oh,
for
yeah.
everything you did.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it only behooved the administration to make our group successful.
Uh-huh.
Our success was going to be their success.
Right, because you were actually bringing in revenue for
yeah.
OHSU uh-huh. as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I wonder if I can backtrack just a little bit to some of the things you mentioned earlier in the interview.
Sure. Can we make it about 15 more minutes?
Yeah, I think we can do it
okay.
in that time.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You mentioned that there was this polarization in Cornelius in, I guess it was late 70s, about the community center.
The community center,
but the
78, 79.
The city of Cornelius was ready to turn this money down to build the community center.
They did. They were not going to. They did turn it down.
But you mentioned that there was a polarization and a struggle for Centro to get the money. Who was on the other side then? Was it the same
nowadays
people?
Now that they see the success of Centro Cultural, even people that were against it are saying that they were part of it, that they were favoring it. So be it as it may, you know, if they want to take credit for it, that's fine. What was important for us was to have it built, and that's what happened.
But was it the group that felt that they didn't want the money, that turned it down, that opposed?
Oh yeah, it was the administration, the city administration.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the mayor, the councilors, city administration. I mean, they turned it down, so they would be against it.
and they'd be against you taking it over too.
Uh-huh.
What sorts of arguments did they raise then to that why Central shouldn't be allowed to take this project?
Well, there were a lot of discriminatory arguments. They were saying that we were going to be turning it into just a Hispanic agency, only to help Hispanics, and arguments that many times didn't make sense, but it made sense to them. To the fact that quite a few of the residents in Cornelius were against it. In fact, we were afraid that people would go by and drive-by shooting. We were afraid, and that's why we had built a wall on the side of the street, just to feel protected.
You mean so it was that polarized? That
When we built it with a wall. But thank goodness there was no serious incidents that I can't remember that ever happened. And once it was built, I think the community has felt much better. I think the take now from the city is that all these nonprofit agencies take land, usually good land that could be used for business, that could bring revenue to the city, and are not bringing revenue to the city.
Uh-huh.
And I know that there is a non-profit agency trying to buy land in Cornelius to establish a Head Start project. And the city was opposed to selling the land because a lot of discriminatory remarks, it's going to be only a bunch of Hispanic kids, you know, running around without, it's going to affect the traffic, it's going to, all kinds of reasons. Uh-huh. Anyway, but the city finally approved it last week, I think.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah.
But it took like about 100 people, Hispanic members from the community that showed up to the meeting.
Uh-huh.
And the people that were opposed were very few, so they just finally ended up leaving. the measure was passed to approve the selling of the land to allow this nonprofit agency to build the Head Start.
Mm-hmm. And actually, an earlier thing I wanted to ask you about too is that you mentioned, I guess, that Central Cultural was started up in the early 70s, and then in
I think it was in 72 that it was registered with the state as a nonprofit agency.
In those early days, it was just 5 years later or so that you said it was already defunct and needed to be resurrected.
Well, they didn't have too many programs. It was more like a family agency. Just people getting together. In fact, some of the projects that they had were one coming from Tektronix. They would send parts to put together, assemble, and send them back. So they had about 12, 14 workers doing that kind of a job. The profit was to fund the utilities of Centro Cultural because that's as much as they could get. There was also another program whereby the they got like 12 sewing machines to do sewing work in there, and they had an alcohol and drug program. They had English as a second language program. it was a two-story house, so they really couldn't have too many programs running there. They also built a garage, a two-car garage, because they wanted to teach 10 people on how to be mechanics, because most of the families had old cars that were breaking down all of the time, and whenever they went to any other shop, they would be charged an arm and a leg.
Uh-huh.
So they said, well, let's have this as a training program for people to be mechanics. That way we don't charge the clients too much. They could afford it. But it was at that time that a little girl, 5-year-old girl, Virginia Garcia, died in one of the migrant camps. And that's when we decided to use the garage instead as a clinic.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the Virginia Garcia Clinic started.
So the auto mechanic school never really got started.
Never took off.
Uh-huh.
Never took off. And it was at that time that I came back. So the director of the Virginia Garcia Clinic and I got an agreement that we would rent the space, the garage, and we would rent an office space in our two-story building for him so that he could be the director there. And
this is the house.
That, yeah, the house before we had the centro,
right.
The new building. And then it was at that time that I was working for Community Action, trying to raise the situation. And then OHDC, Oregon Human Development Corporation, came from California. It used to be California Human Development Corporation in Oregon. And I had the director of that agency rent more office space in the house to start his program of programs for migrant agricultural workers.
Mm-hmm.
So my philosophy has always been: we need to form coalitions. We need to work together. And so that's why Centro has always been at the center of these coalitions and these other agencies.
Uh-huh. And what had happened between the beginnings of Centro Cultural and the time when you helped resurrect it? How did it fail in those first years? It just
it came to the point in which the board of directors and the community didn't think that that the director was doing the job that he was supposed to.
Uh-huh. And so there was a crisis of leadership.
Both times.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the 84 situation too. You mentioned that they were borrowing money from project funds to pay the utility bills, et cetera, and that there was an economic problem, and that the board decided to let the director go, but then they got you involved. Mm-hmm. How was the economic problem solved?
What we did was to justify the $25,000 or thereabouts that were given to this particular project. We were able to justify by bringing in volunteers to do all the work that was supposed to be done by this project.
Uh-huh.
And we were documenting on a monthly basis our progress in of that project until we were satisfied that we had more than done the job that was expected from that project. And the church that gave the money said, you have done it, that's fine.
Okay, so yeah, they didn't care that you maybe did it with volunteer work as opposed to...
No, as long as the work was done.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other question that I had, a couple other questions actually. One, both have to do with you personally more, but you mentioned you had some ambivalence about continuing as a priest and that you went back to consult with your bishop in mm-hmm. Mexico. Now, this must have been a trusted friend or leader of the church.
Bishop Sergio Mendez, yeah, may he rest in peace. He was... very politically involved in the state, in the nation, in the world. He was going to all kinds of conferences. But at the same time, he was very human, and I was very attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I decided to get the wisdom from him to make an informed decision. because it was important. I had been very happy and had worked very well as a priest, and I wanted to do likewise if I left the ministry. And to this day, I could truly tell you, you know, was I happier as a in the ministry, or am I happier now? I cannot tell you. I have been as happy as a family person as I was happy as a priest.
And was it the desire to live a normal life, to get married and have a family? Was that part of what?
That was part of it, because I thought I am here at this age in which I, if I decide to continue in the ministry, I want to be dedicated 100% to the ministry. I don't want to be having any more ambivalences. But if I am going to be leaving, I need to do it now. So it was when I went back to my bishop and stayed there for a year, I had not made up my mind one way or the other. In fact, I was probably more inclined to staying.
And then how did your decision-making process develop then?
Talking about it, discussing it out loud, saying what the future would expect from me in the ministry, and what would be the future if it was not in the ministry. And I thought the challenge was more of a challenge to go into the unknown than to stay into the known kind of a career. And basically, it was like somebody saying, okay, this is it. I don't know what that is, but I told the bishop, I think this is it. I'm leaving. You go with my blessing.
And he helped you arrive at that point?
Yeah.
And how did he do that? How did he help?
Listening, mostly. Mostly listening and orientation.
Then
I knew that he couldn't make a decision for me, and I was not expecting him to make a decision for me. But at the same time, he helped me make a more informed decision, and it helped me also feel good about it, because I knew that he was supporting.
And did you stay in contact with him afterwards?
All the time, all the time. Every time that I went to Mexico, I always went to visit him, and
And then you mentioned that you you married in what year was that?
86.
86. Okay. And how did you meet your wife?
In Cornelius. She's from Mexico, from Veracruz. But she was working here. She was working in one of the factories in Bayam. And she had an access to come into Centro for assistance and help. And we started, I started, her sister used to invite me to, her sister and her family used to invite me to have meals every now and then I would see her there with her sister. But there was nothing at that time until later, when I decided, okay, that's time. So when I back in December, came back in December of 85, I started seeing her.
And you've since you said you have three children now.
Three children. And she had one on of her own that she was raising.
Okay.
And we are now proud parents of two, two grandchildren from him. And all boys. My children are all boys, and his children are all boys. The two of them.
Okay.
So.
So the family is doing well.
It's we are making the 210 increase.
Okay, Jose. Well, I want to thank you very much for this interview. But before we stop, is there any other subject maybe that we haven't discussed so far that you'd like to talk a little bit about?
Well, I think the presence of the Hispanic community in Oregon is going to be more and more important. I think we are here to stay. And I always like to think that all the territory that was taken away from Mexico back in the 1800s, we're going to take it back one way or another. And if nothing else, by our presence. Our presence is increasing by leaps and bounds. And we are going to be the main source of labor for the nation. In 10 years, the white Anglo-Saxon majority will be very old, in need of people to work for them, do the work for them, because they won't be able to do it. And we're going to do it. And then I think we are going to be seeing a reversal, that the majority of the people here are going to be the whites. And the minority are going to be the whites. The majority are going to be the minorities.
Uh-huh.
Not only Hispanics, but the minorities, minority groups. Mm-hmm. Hispanics, Asians, Afro-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And and the country will turn around in a different way. And I don't know what's going to be that way, because it's kind of difficult to predict. You know, this we have the ability nowadays of information right the second it happens.
Yes.
And so not only Hispanics, but all the minority groups are not privy to that kind of access to that information. But it's coming. It's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to those years and see my children be part of that new movement that is going to be taking place. And I don't know what is going to be taking place, but I want them to be part of it. Uh-huh. In the same manner that I was part of it, you know, throughout my life. Sometimes I feel tired. I feel like sometimes people suggest, why don't you run for office? Or I mean, all the people know you. Why don't you run for any type of office, political office? And I want to dedicate my life to my kids when they are still in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I'll probably be too old, but I can influence them, and maybe they can run for office.
Uh-huh.
And I hope that they will.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to say about anything we have or haven't discussed?
Yeah. If anything else comes to your mind, let me know.
Okay.
We can maybe get together again.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you again, Jose, for this interview. It's been a great interview, I think.
Okay, Michael.
A very valuable addition to our project. So
okay, Michael.
Thank you.
My pleasure.